All right. We're going to go. I guess I'll say this, first of all. The one thing I didn't say this morning, and it dawned on me, with First Chronicles having 29 chapters, how do I read it? Well, it divides perfectly, 9, 11, and 9. If you go look at it sometime, it just divides that way. 9 chapters of history and lineage, 10 chapters of David, or 11 chapters of David, and then 9 of the gaining the temple and building it and organizing it. So that's how I read it. Now, we're going through, and I guess to some extent, trying to look at history through a Bible perspective. And when you're dealing with American or British history, that's a fairly easy thing to do because the Bible is such part of the history of America and England. Now, to get an idea of that, England came out of the feudal ages, just like all other churches, where they had a thing called serfdom, which all Europe did. And it's not that the lord of the manor owned you. The land owned you. You couldn't leave the land you were on. And the owner of the manor owned the land. That's where we get the term landlord. Okay? He was the lord of the manor. This is his land. You live on it. There was no freedom of movement to go from one place to another. And it was King Edward the Third, or Edward the Second, excuse me, who was really a great king. But towards the end of his kingdom, he expelled the Jews from England. Terrible mistake. A terrible mistake. In the next generation, God sent the Black Death into England. And there are certain towns where only one-third of the people lived. Generally, overall, one-third of the people of England died. If you can imagine, you know, one-third of the people of the United States dying. And it was a terrible time. But what ended up happening out of it was the labor shortage was so great that it changed the ratio of who could work and who couldn't. And it actually freed the serfs more than any other thing could do, because if a guy left the farmland he was on and went into the town to get a job, they'd hire him. Okay, you know? So it changed things in that sense. But some of you have heard of the old thing, trial by combat. You know, two men are angry, they put them in combat, knowing the Lord will protect the right one, you know. So you stab him in the heart, see, it really was my land, you know, he's dying. And, you know, trial by fire, where they put a hot rod in your hand and then see how quickly your hands healed and see if you were guilty or not. Now, these are terrible medieval things. Well, England then began to develop something that was unique to England, and it's what's called the common law. The common law worked on two bases. Number one, if something could be proved to be precedent, that it had always been the law, and you could show a judge in court that from time immemorial, this is how we've judged these things, that became part of the British Constitution, which was never written. It was all precedent for how things worked. An example of that would be when Prince John was on the throne, and he really was an ugly king and prince in many ways. And so a group of his noblemen reared up against him. That's not an unusual thing. And John went out to fight them, and they met him at Runnymede. And there they forced him to sign a charter called Magna Carta, the Great Charter. And there's parts of Magna Carta no one even understands. Historians argue what it even means. I mean, that's how obscure their laws were in that time. But some of the things were understood. For example, John had a habit of just coming into a castle whenever he wanted. They made him sign a thing that said he could not go into a castle unless he had the owner of the castle's permission, or he put up his banner of war. All right, it's war now. Okay, one of two ways you're going to do this. Now, one of the things that happens in a King James Bible is the word castle is misunderstood. For example, in the book of Genesis, it talks about the dukes of Edom and such. Duke begat, began a duke, begat duke, begat duke, and goes on and such. And it talks about them in their castles. And so you'll find the expositors.
ones that are saying, well, this is a bad translation of the Hebrew. These people didn't really have castles, because you think of a castle of Disney and Tinkerbell flying over these, you know, things. And so, but castle has a legal meaning in English. And what castle meant was that you owned your land in its own right. It's your land, and it's your home. Who owned that land? Only the only people who actually owned their land outright were the highest lords and such from the disbursement of land from Norman the Conqueror conquering England. They're the only ones who actually own their own land. They might own as much as what we call two counties today. Everybody else is serfs and peasants underneath them. But whatever your main ground, whatever your main land, that's your castle, that house, that's your castle. That's where your headquarters was. So when in the book of Genesis, when it talks about castles, it's not talking about this big thing with pyramids and, you know, towers and everything. It's talking about men who owned their land in their own right and who had rule over that with an independence. And that's what castle meant. So the thing is, under the Magna Carta, it was ruled... Prince John had signed that if he was going to enter a castle, he'd either do it by war or he'd do it by permission. But we're going to get this thing straight. You're not going to sneak your way in. You know, if you force your way in, it is an act of war, and you will raise your banner first to let us know you're going to do it. Okay, so they signed that. Well, fast forward 500 years, 1600s in England, and the sheriff enters a man's cottage, kicks the door down to arrest him, and the man took his blunderbuss and graduated the sheriff to the next life. So, to the English, it was an open-shut case. I shot the sheriff, you know, and so they arrested him, and they took him to jail, and, they're building gallows. It's obvious. He shot the sheriff. Well, his lawyer argued this. He said, Your Honor, this man owns his land in his own right. That's his house. Under Magna Carta, the sheriff couldn't enter without permission. And it was ruled, though a man's home be just a humble cottage, a man's home is his castle, where even the king may not enter without permission. So now if you live in Allegheny County, you might live in Decatur, Potter County, or you might live in Cattaraugus or Wyoming County or whatever else. But if the sheriff wants to enter your home, he either needs your permission or he goes to a judge and he gets a declaration of war. A warrant. Okay? With that warrant, he has war. He can come in with guns blazing. Okay? So that's one of those things how the common law worked. Something that went all the way back to the year 1100 actually worked its way into English and American common law until it became a feature of law. So the other thing is this. If you could prove to a judge that what you were being arrested for was against the Bible itself, then the judge would rule in your favor. Now, here's the thing. We've heard of common law marriage. Normally, we think of that as a shack job. You know, they're shacking up together, common law marriage. That is not what that means. In other words, in England, in order to be married legally, you had to go to the Church of England. You had to have a Church of England permit and such to get married, and the problem was England couldn't keep enough priests and prelates and curates around to handle all the marriages and such, and men would just come together, have a ceremony, get married, and you know, the man and the woman, and they'd get married, and there is no legal document, and the court said that's a marriage. Under the common law, that's a marriage. They intend to be married, they want to be married, that is a marriage. Now, up until about 20 years ago, New York was a common law state. And if you intended to be married to someone, you'll still hear of social workers when an old couple dies and they never married, one of them dies. The social workers will go back and establish a common law marriage for that spouse to get her Social Security. Because they got together back when New York was under the common law. If you remember back then, they used to call judges justice of the peace. Now they're called magistrate and judges. Why? We're not under the common law anymore. Why justice of the peace? Because the peace of England belonged to the king. So if you're out drunk one night, you're kicking down your neighbors and such, it was a violation of the king's peace. Okay? And you went before a justice of the peace, a man meant to keep the peace of England like it is, and you went before him, and you were judged for that. So
England began this tremendous experiment of trying to make the Bible work in their laws. So what was right in the Bible was right in the laws. Now here's how it worked. Under Hebrew law, for example, if you had an ox under Hebrew law, and your ox was wont to push, what's that mean? He's kind of mean, all right? Brother McVeigh is preaching in Lebanon, Pennsylvania today for a preacher who got pinned by a bull yesterday. And he was out there working, and a bull pinned him, and he doesn't feel much like preaching today. And so if you had an ox that was wont to push, that ox killed somebody. Here's what the law looked at. Did you know that that ox was liable to push and hurt somebody? And if the neighbors can come in, we warned that guy. We told him his ox does that. You got the death penalty. You had an ox that you knew would do that, and you didn't tie it up. The example I've used it here before. One time we had a chow that wandered into our yard, and lo and behold, when the kids fed him secretly, he didn't leave. But the thing was, he was a stubborn little dog. He came in, and with his eyes, he took a photograph of everything in the yard, and that was acceptable, and anything that changed after that was unacceptable. For example, I bought a truck about 2 months later, and he never accepted the truck, ever. Ever. Hated that truck. I just drive in with it, wasn't there when he first got there. But he was a mean little dog off the leash, and he got off the leash one time, and he chased a toddler up the stairs. And I told my kids, if that dog ever gets off the leash again, he's dead. I'm not having that in my house, where I got a dog that people have to lock. You know what, it got off the leash again, straight to the pound, and the dog was dead. That's it, okay? I am not gonna have that. Not gonna have it on my conscience that you've got a dog out there that can kill people and he's getting off the leash. You know, can you imagine going to somebody where their toddler's been mauled by your dog and you knew full well your dog would do that? Well, that's the law of Moses, okay? The idea if you knew. So today, let's say you buy some vehicle made by Toyota or Ford or something like that. You got your kids packed in there. You're driving down the road. You have a 30 mile an hour fender bender, but the side door opens and your child flies out into the road. Oh my goodness, who would make a car where a child would fly out the road at 30 miles an hour? So you go to the lawyers about it. You know what they're going to do? They're going to go back to the emails and everything the engineers about that car said. And if they can find out the engineers knew ahead of time that that liability was there, there it's over. They're going to pay the big bucks. Okay? Why? Because they knew that was liable. They took the responsibility for it, knew it was liable, and covered it all up. And that's the big thing in case law. Did they know ahead of time? Where does that come from? Straight out of Moses' law. Moses' law said that. If you know what you have is liable, you're going to be guilty of that. So, this great experiment in England and then America of trying to establish a country on the laws of God. When did that change? Under Oliver Wendell Holmes, back about 1900, he began to take American law off the common law and put it on what's called Roman law. What's the difference between the common law and Roman law? Common law is law in harmony with the Bible, and harmony with law and harmony with long-standing principle. Roman law is just when a majority of people in the legislature vote a law in. Two different things. The common law has always been just. Roman law is sometimes just and sometimes not. Now, go with me, if you would, to Exodus chapter 23. And go to verse 1. This is part of the Mosaic Law, where he's actually telling them how to live together. Thou shalt not raise a false report. Put not thine hand with the wicked to be an unrighteous witness. Thou shalt not follow a multitude to do evil. Neither shalt thou speak in a cause to decline after many to wrest judgment. Now look at the first three. Neither shalt thou countenance a poor man in his cause. What? What's it talking about? Let's say you're a judge and a man comes in and says, "But your honor, I'm so poor I had to do this." Eh. Whether or not he's poor has nothing to do with justice. Nothing to do. That's why Solomon said, if a man be hungry and he steal bread, no man despises him, but he'll pay sevenfold. You don't despise him. He was hungry when he stole. Well, if the law is fourfold, why is the poor man going to pay sevenfold? Because he can't get four loaves of bread. Okay? How's if he's so poor that he's hungry, how is he going to get four loaves of bread? Why does he pay sevenfold? He has to sell himself into indentured servitude for 7 years. He's paying sevenfold for this. It's the only way he can get out of it. And to be honest with you, it was one of the most just principles ever established on this earth was indentured servitude. If you're of Anglo-Saxon last name and your family comes from whenever, more than likely your people came over here as indentured servants. In other words, they went to somewhere in London or one of the great ports in England and sold themselves to a company. How long could a man sell? If a man was a Christian and he's a citizen of the country, or he's just a Christian, let's put it that way, and he's of that country, and you're under the common law, how long could a man legally sell himself for? We'll go to Exodus chapter 21. Exodus 21. Verse 1. Now these are the judgments which thou shalt set before them. If thou buy an Hebrew servant, 6 years he shall serve, and in the seventh he shall walk free for nothing. That was the basis of common law. A poor man could go sell himself. And for 6 years he labored to whoever sold himself for. But in that seventh year, you had to let him go for nothing. What happened? He didn't starve. He didn't go through any of these things. His kids are fed. Everything's taken care of for this period of time. In fact, you go on further in the law, it encourages the whoever lets him go then to give him things, to start on his own again and get going on his own. So many, many, many of the settlers who came between 1600 to say 1800 came over here as indentured servants, where they sold themselves to a company. That company then auctioned them off, sold them to sea captains who brought them to ports in the United States, who auctioned them off, and farmers would buy it. Boy, that guy looks strong. Look at that. Look like his wife could collect some hen eggs. Buy that family, and they'd come in there, and for 6 years they labored together for that other farmer, and at the end of the 7 years went out there. They're part of the community now. There's a house raising. He gets his own land, and he starts out. And such. It's one of the best systems that's ever been devised to raise the poor up. If you keep this in mind, that the North American continent and the Constitution of the United States of America is the greatest gift that God ever gave to the poor on this earth. There has never, ever been anything whereby poor people have come and raised themselves up to such wealth and riches. It's been one of the most marvelous things that God ever did. Now, you couldn't take and say, well, this guy's poor, we're going to do the law different. So, no, thou shalt not countenance a poor man in his cause. You don't do that. Why? Because under a system like this, every man is equal standing before the law. What's the picture of justice? That blindfold. Now, does that always work perfect? No. Okay? If the rich man's son does what your son did, chances are the rich man's son's going to have a better lawyer, get off, and your son's going to sit 6 months in jail, and the rich man's son's going to go off to Harvard or Yale, okay? I understand that. But as terrible as you think it is, try to go into another land where they don't even try to do it.
That's right.
Okay? Try to go into one of those, okay? It's like Winston Churchill said, our laws and everything are terrible. They're just better than everybody else's, okay? And again, I always go back to that thing when I was involved in a lawsuit and troubled and asked my pastor, I said, don't we feel terrible suing someone? He said, you ever go into a country where they don't have lawsuits? They shoot each other. He said, this is the way that you go in before a judge and let him determine between two neighbors who can't get along, okay? He says, it's a civil and a right way to handle it. And I understand lawsuits are abused. I understand that. But again, go into a country where they don't have them. See what happens when you cross somebody, okay? See what happens when that happens. Now, look at, go to Exodus 30, look at verse 15. Exodus 30, verse 15. It's talking about a taxing going on. It's, the rich shall not give more, and the poor shall not give less than half a shekel when they give an offering unto the Lord to make an atonement for your souls. Now that would drive the average liberal crazy. The poor man had to pay just as much as a rich man. The rich man had to pay just as much as a poor man. Why? First of all, it's something the poor man could afford, okay? And they all paid the same amount. Do you want to know what something that's wrought more freedom in the United States than South America will ever have? Land taxes.
What do you mean?
Well, do you realize at one time Pennsylvania belonged to one man? Do you realize that there's huge areas that big in South America that belong to one man and they still belong to that family? And the peasants have to rent from them that family over and over again for 200-300 years and they can never get it back. Why? Because that family exempted themselves from land taxes. Okay? It doesn't cost them anything to hold on to it. You know what happened to the sons of William Penn? They had to fight in court because they wanted to exempt themselves from the land taxes. And the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania had to fight them for decades and finally won the right to tax their land. And you know what? They couldn't hold on to it. In this country, you either work land or get rid of it. In this country, you either take land and make it do what it's supposed to do or you get rid of it. Either places where the land tax is too much, yeah, the state of New York suffers from that right now. The land is too heavy. What's the proof of that? The western counties are just dying, okay? People are just moving out, they're going. But we're dominated by, you know, New York City and Westchester County and Long Island and such. And it hasn't hit them yet. New York's lost, I think it's over 1.3 million people of just its normal stock. It's been replaced with different immigrants and things, but its normal stock of people has lost 1.3 million people in the last decade. Right, and just had to leave. Why? Because the lay of the land is just too heavy for it. Okay? But it'll be another generation before just common sense and such, and the rot slowly begins to hit the cities, and they begin to realize, oh, we've done this to it. Oh, yeah, we killed all those people out there. You know, that's killing us. But that's just part of the nature of man. It's just part of a thing that goes on, and what happens? People end up moving somewhere else. They end up going somewhere else. They start new lives. They start new lands. They start doing new things. But it's that idea again, when taxes started in the United States, they didn't exempt the rich. Go to South America where they exempted the rich. And they never were able to settle it. People were never able to get their own lands, never able to get a good start or anything else. You come here, you're either going to work your land or you're going to give it back to the state, okay? Or you're going to sell it to somebody to go on. So we think of that thing in land taxes, and we think, well, that's a problem. Yeah, because nobody likes to pay them. But look what it's done for this country as compared to places where they didn't do that, okay? Now, an issue I want to deal with here real briefly is this. When this country was first settled in the 1600s, involuntary human servitude was ubiquitous. What do I mean by that? Slavery was everywhere. Probably the one place the most free from it was Pennsylvania because of the Quaker influence there. If you live in Allegheny County, chances are the land you live on was originally cleared by slaves. Allegheny County, New York. If you go back to the 1800, 1810 census, slaves lived right here. How did they get rid of slaves then? You know, if you listen to people, why did the South keep slaves longer than the North? And they'll say, well, the climate was better. That doesn't explain it all. There was slavery in New York for 200 years. Slavery in the South for 230 years. That doesn't explain it, okay? Here's what explains it. In England, slavery was outlawed because those Negroes were Christians and they could not be held by another Christian for over 6 years. That's the common law. The common law says you can't do it. And so finally they had a case where a Virginia planter stopped in London, took his slave off, and an anti-slavery society grabbed him, and it went through the courts, and in 1775, Lord Mansfield ruled that the air of England is too pure for a slave to breathe. The second it touches his nostrils, he's a free man. Unless he was an indentured servant. And then he's got to be let go in 7 years. But this man had been held over 7 years. He was free. It's over. Did that count for the colonies? Not according to the people in England. That's what the whole American Revolution was about. They didn't want to give the colonies the rights of Englishmen. So the colonies begin to fight for the rights of Englishmen, which means Lord Mansfield's ruling is here. Okay? That's what it means. In 1777, I believe I have the date right, Massachusetts wrote the first constitution of any of the freed colonies, the freed states. They tried to get rid of slavery and they couldn't. Slavery was too big in Massachusetts. Go read any stories of that period of time. There's slaves all over. And the Boston merchants are making a fortune off of slavery. They couldn't get rid of slavery. By 1790, John Adams writes, there's not a slave left in the state. What happened in 13 years? Lord Mansfield's ruling became to be understood, and a slave just dropped his rake and walked to the magistrate and said, I've been held for over 7 years. Bang, you are a free man. Why? It's the common law. You can't be held for over 7 years. In the seventh year, you should go free for nothing. And by 1790, there were no slaves left at all in Massachusetts. The same thing happened in Rhode Island. Same thing happened, well, Maine would have been part of that at that time. Connecticut then slowed it down and kept slavery till 1848. Just 17 years before the South lost their slaves. So states like New York and New Jersey then, and here's what really saved the Union, a man by the name of DeWitt Clinton. Who is DeWitt Clinton? He's the man who is the governor of New York who came up with the idea for the Erie Canal. When they built the Erie Canal, New York was the first state to open up the West. The West could be populated just as much as the East Coast could. Why is that important? Because if you lived in Virginia, and you lived in Albemarle County, Virginia, and I'm going to make these numbers up only to illustrate, the point is factual. I just don't know what the actual numbers are. 800 men in Albemarle County could have a legislator. But if you moved out to Charleston, Virginia, which is now Charleston, West Virginia, it took 1,000 men to have a legislator. Why? Because the people on the East Coast would not give equal representation to the people in the West. Why? Because the people in the West worked with their own hands. They don't want slavery. The people on the East Coast, they don't want the common law enforced on their slaves. They wanted to have Roman law where they overrode the common law. North Carolina did that, South Carolina did that, Georgia did that, okay? So that the people in the western counties did not have equal representation with the eastern counties. When New York opened up its western counties, they couldn't do that because the influx of people was too great. Do you know where the single largest slave plantation in America was in 1800? Yeah, it was a plantation called Dixie on Staten Island. It had 1,000 slaves. But in 1827, New York passed a law trying to, how do you handle this thing now when you have the common law telling you you have to let them go? What's going to happen here? And so they passed a law called the Natty Most Post-Emancipation Act. And what it was this. If you were a slave in the state of New York over 25 years old, you were going to stay a slave for life. Keep my life expectancy, he wasn't much over 40. If you were under 25, you would stay a slave until your 25th birthday and you'd be let go. If you were born a slave, you couldn't be held over 25 years old, and this was gradually to work its way out. Well, the old Dutchman that owned Dixie in Staten Island, He somehow managed to get all 1,000 of those slaves to gladly sign, because the only way you could be sold to a slave state is if you signed you didn't mind. And he managed to get all 1,000 slaves to say, yeah, we'd just as soon go down to Alabama and Mississippi. And, you know, that just sounded like we'd love to get our backs flogged for the next 20, 30 years and clear land. And he managed to get a signature off every one of those slaves, and he sold them down there. And a song began to pop up where they longed for the land of Dixie. And the original versions amongst the old slaves and that, they talk about buckwheat and things that don't even grow down south. They only grew up there. All right? That's why most Southerners don't realize they're singing about New York City when they sing Dixie. They don't know that. Okay? But the thing is, New York then purged itself of slavery. Virginia tried to do the same thing with Thomas Jefferson leading it. And they had an identical law to New York. Can you imagine if that law had passed, how much different the history of the United States would have been? It lost by one vote in the legislature. And every historian who's looked at it since realized that had the western part of Virginia been given equal representation, it would have passed overwhelmingly. You know what the Constitution of the United States guarantees to every state? A Republican form of government. You know what Abe Lincoln said? We owe those people a Republican form of government. And that's why he always said, he never said these states, he said certain elements in the South have done this. Why? Because it's not universal. That's not a Republican form of government. When the power is all on the East Coast and everybody lives on the West, part of the state doesn't have equal power. That's not a Republican form of government. Lincoln understood that. He would say certain elements in the South, certain elements have done this. Now, what happens when you set up something that way? Well, to give you an idea, in South Carolina, 60% of the inhabitants of South Carolina were slaves. Now, just stop and think of that. Imagine 6 out of every 10 people you ever meet were slaves. But in South Carolina, they established a thing. And of course, keep in mind, of that 40% that's free, half of those are women. They can't vote. They can't hold office. Of the 20% that's left, about half of them have not reached the age of majority. They're under 21. So now you're down to 10% of the people who can hold power. But South Carolina had property restrictions on holding office, which made about 4 to 5% of the people of South Carolina were even eligible to hold an office. There are more people in North Korea eligible to hold office today, percentage-wise, than South Carolina had in 1860. Okay? So Lincoln said, that's not a Republican form of government. He'd say certain elements in the South, and he'd always say that. He would never ascribe what they were doing to being a state legislature. He would never do that. He'd say certain elements of governance. Why? Because they're no longer a Republican form of government. They've abandoned that. They've let it go. And not only that, they're violating the very laws of God. They have Christian slaves, and they've held them for over 7 years. The common law forbid that. So then using a rigged legislature, they voted Roman law to keep those people enslaved forever. Okay? Now, that needs to be understood to understand the whole context of what happens over the next 20, 30 years as the two parts of the country, both slave and free. When the Battle of Gettysburg happened, one of the things you'll find over and over again, every Southern memoir of the Battle of Gettysburg says the same thing. When those people from the South came into those rich farmlands of Pennsylvania, they were stunned at the wealth. They hadn't come to big plantations and manors, they just came to a big farm with a big red barn, where a man and his 5 or 6 sons, raising some cattle, got some horses, rich fields, opulent house, good furniture, carriages out there. And they were stunned. The North had something that the South didn't even begin to understand, the wealth of just each individual person. In the 1850 census and on, cotton became the number one export from the United States. So the South said, we won the battle.
Here's the North, relying on manufacturing. Here's the South, cotton has made it. Our economy is better. Hinton Hopper, who grew up in the South in the Yadkin River in North Carolina, wrote a book called The Impending Crisis of the South. He understood it economically. And he said this, he said, what the South doesn't understand is the North is not exporting most of its wealth. And he actually proved from census figures that just one farmer to another selling hay back and forth, you ever see somebody sell hay? That the value of the hay sold from one farmer to another in the North outweighed the entire Southern cotton crop. There was more wealth than that. But nobody's measuring that because it's just going from one farmer to another. See? So the South became deceived, sitting there by themselves and thinking we have all this wealth, that our economy is better, but their economy is built on violating the very laws of God here. And they knew it, and they overrode it purposely. Knowing that, having Lord Mansfield's rulings, having the New England states, having just by the bang of a gavel let their slaves go, the northern states using those post-natty emancipation acts to get rid of it, and the South putting a stop to that through unequal representation in their own legislatures. With the express purpose, we're doing it to hold on to slavery. You know what the penalty was for having a stolen man? Your life. Do you realize one quarter of the men of South Carolina between the ages of 15 and 65 died in 4 years? One quarter of them died. When Sherman was going through Georgia and he was burning, the people would come out and say, we know you have to burn this, we just ask you one thing. And he said, what's that? Go do this in South Carolina. And he did. And he went through and he burned there. This nation was established off of common law. And then it was established upon a constitutional order, and it was established on laws that were greater than any of the men following them, the laws themselves. And it's like I've started and said a few times, if I die for this country, it's not because somebody's waving the flag and making me feel patriotic. It's going to be for the constitutional order of this country. Those laws that were set up where men can come here, women can come here, various faiths can come here, and various cultures can come here, and various ethnic groups can come here and flourish under these laws and do well. That's what we fight for. That's what the heritage is out of this Bible. Father, thank you for what we've learned, Pastor Haynes.